My husband and I treated ourselves to a night at the Radisson Blue in downtown Chicago. We don't get to do things like this usually, so it was awesome. The rates were very inexpensive, and there were certain things that you had no access to. But we didn't care. Since there wasn't room service, we ordered off Uber Eats. Nothing fancy, just pot bellies. I went downstairs. It's 10 p.m. to wait and smoke a cigarette. To be kind, I went around the side, but still near the front. There was no one walking around. I got the food, but decided to finish smoking around the side. Suddenly, a really nicely dressed dude with a camo mask walked up and asked me for a cigarette. Normally that's not an issue, but he seemed a bit off. I can't explain it, except to say as soon as he asked me, I felt like something was wrong, and his voice sounded odd. When I gave him a cigarette, he got really close. Then it started to get scary. He asked for some food. I felt bad, but it wasn't possible to give him food. It was 2 sandwiches. I said I was sorry, but it was for my husband and I. I figured he'd leave, and I could finish smoking. Instead, he walked up so close he was against the food bag, and I was against the other side, almost pressing against the glass. Then he asked for some food again. And when I said no, I'm really sorry, he insisted I could, but I was lying. He was getting angry. But he wasn't yelling, so not to attract attention, I guess. It continued like that for a few minutes. Then he asked to use my lighter. I gave it to him, and he started on how I was lying again. He insisted I could give him food. Then he asked if I worked there, and I said I was staying at the hotel. I was already really nervous. He asked where I was staying, and I asked why. He said because there were a lot of hotels in the area. I pointed at the hotel behind me. I don't know why. I was really anxious at this point. This whole interaction was so scary, and I usually have no issues dealing with people. However, he was getting pushier and angrier, and then he said, "So you're staying here?" I said yes. During this entire time, he kept saying I was lying about the food. Again, he started getting closer and closer to me as I backed up. He kept angrily insisting that I could give him food, but didn't want to. I said, "No, I'm sorry, I can't." We were already too close for comfort and safe distances. He was pressing against the bag and I was holding against my chest. His face was inches from mine. Then he said, "So you're here with your boyfriend?" I said, "Husband," and I saw him check my hand. I started walking backwards to the back door, which was probably about 50 feet away. I thought if I didn't act afraid, it would turn out better, but I was afraid. His cigarette was lit and he was still holding my lighter. People usually give it back at this point. He kept demanding some food. I felt this was time to be more assertive, so I demanded my lighter back, and he started to get even more angry at me, saying over and over that I could give him some food. He then gave me back my lighter, but grabbed both of my arms. I started getting terrified and banging on the glass door with my elbows to get the receptionist's attention, but she ignored me. He got pissed and said something, but I was so scared I wasn't paying attention. I just wanted help. If anyone reading this knew me, they'd know I'd never bang on a window yelling for help unless I was absolutely terrified. I started crying because I was alone on a side street at night and no one could help me. I had no thoughts but to get away. I wasn't thinking he'd hurt me in a specific way. I just thought danger, run. That's how scared I was. He got angry that I was crying and pulled me closer. Suddenly something happened that changed everything and I'm so grateful. My mom called. I headed my earbuds in, which you couldn't see because my hood was up on my coat. So I pressed answer and started crying hysterically and almost screaming, "He's trying to attack me! He's trying to attack me!" That really angered him because he tightened his grip for a second, but also startled him and he let go, and I ran to the doors while still crying and shaking. I cried all the way back to the room. My mom comforted me on the phone and told me not to go back outside again. My husband was very comforting and sweet. He just held me, and then he wanted to know everything. I had to say it a few times because I was still crying and couldn't breathe. Plus, I was talking fast. I saw him again, maybe 1 a.m. I was standing in front of the hotel this time by all those tall ashtray things they have outside restaurants and hotels. I wasn't alone, though. A security guard was beside me. I went inside and saw him through the glass where he had assaulted me. I don't know if he was waiting for me or what, but it terrified me. That same night, another person asked me for a cigarette, and it was a really nice woman. She thanked me, but she could tell I was upset, I guess. She asked and I told her. She sympathized and explained that's why she carried a very small handgun which was in her purse. I'm definitely getting mace, so this doesn't happen again.
Back when I was in college, I used to work nights at my uncle's motel just outside of Baton Rouge. It was a pretty sweet gig for the most part. I was already a total night owl during the summers, so instead of staying home with my parents, getting on their nerves, and being bored stiff during the midnight hours, I got to watch movies, read comic books, order takeout, and get paid for the whole thing. I remember those times with a lot of nostalgia, to be honest, but every so often, I think about this one night where I happened across one of the creepiest things I'd ever seen. It might even be the creepiest thing I'd ever even heard of, too, mainly because of what it might have entailed and how many unanswered questions it left me with. It started with the motel's fire alarm going off. The fire alarm automatically alerted the fire department, so officially speaking, all they had to do was make sure all the guests evacuated properly. But then unofficially, with it being my uncle's only form of livelihood, and him being terrible at making his insurance payments, it was always an unwritten rule that whoever was on duty would have to try their darndest to put the fire out before the whole friggin' place burned down. So, that's what I did. Once I saw smoke billowing out of one of the rooms, I ran up there with my fire extinguisher, kicked in the door, and was relieved when I saw that the fire was basically a small one in the center of the room. I just let rip on that thing with my extinguisher, then within a couple of seconds, the fire was out and I'd saved the day. Obviously, I didn't pay much attention to what else was going on in the room, and the fact that there was no one in it didn't faze me because I figured they evacuated like everyone else. My uncle had already been alerted of the fire, and he's been ringing the motel's phone like crazy, and boy did I feel like a hero telling him that I basically saved his entire income by putting the fire out before it could spread. He then asked me to check on the actual damage before the fire department showed, which was still going to be a while, hence why he'd always asked me to be Johnny on the spot with an extinguisher if there was ever a fire. So, I do as I'm told, heading back up to the room while reassuring the parking lot's congregation of guests that everything's going to be fine, and that I put the fire out. Only when I get back to the room do I realize that the fire had been set in one of the small metal trash cans that was in each person's room. Someone had obviously filled the thing with God knows what, placed it in the center of the room, then just set the thing on fire before bailing out of the room. Then right as I'm thinking, why would someone do that? I realized someone had arranged a bunch of stuff around the room. There were clothes, kid clothes, and interspersed among them were a bunch of what looked like kids' drawings. Then when I checked out what the drawings were of, I realized it wasn't just the fire department that should be on their way. It was the cops, too. The drawings were of kids in cages, or sad, crying kids with big, angry-looking grown-ups towering over them. Then another was of what seemed to be one kid crying over a dead kid while the grown-up figures laughed. Seriously, they were so horrific that despite the heat and smoke still circulating in the room, I felt a little chill go down my spine. I immediately went to call the cops, then checked who was booked into the room and, more importantly, if any kids were booked in there too. There was just one guy's name in there, Cameron O'Dell. So what was one lone guy doing with so many kids' clothes? The drawings were horrifying, but it wasn't out of the question that an adult could have been responsible for them. The clothes, though, that was a different story. Right after the fire department arrived and they were checking the room over to confirm it was safe for the other guests to head back to their rooms, I asked the group of guests in the parking lot if there was a Cameron O'Dell among them. No one spoke up or raised a hand, and no one by the name or any other name booked another room after everything died down, so I'm guessing whoever was calling themselves by that name had gotten out of there following the fire. The cops showed up a short while after the fire department did, and I showed them all the clothes and drawings I'd found, along with the booking under the O'Dell name. Officially, their investigation would involve looking for potential arson, but the cops told me that they'd be looking into the clothes and drawings too if they ever caught the guy who tried to set the room on fire. And that was pretty much the last I heard of it. For the first few weeks that followed, I kept asking my uncle if they'd caught the guy who'd set the room on fire. Each time the answer was the same, no. I tried telling him about the kid's clothes and the pictures, but all he seemed to care about was that the damage to the room was minimal. Besides, I was his hero, having put the fire out and all, so whenever the subject came up, it was all just backslaps and that's my boy kind of talk. It was really hard to get any details. Like I said earlier, what I'm mostly left with here are unanswered questions and a lot of half-baked theories of what that guy was trying to do, but there's one in particular that really sits with me. If the guy had a bunch of kids locked up somewhere, if it was him that was trafficking children and he was trying to dispose of the evidence or something, he definitely went about it in a really dumb way. But then, what if he was one of the kids that had been abused, and he was trying to draw attention to it some way? What if he tried to get people to listen to him time and time again? Obviously, there's a lot to unpack here with that one, and it brings up way more questions than it answers, but I really don't know what else to make of such a creepy situation. I just feel like there's some deep, dark backstory to the whole thing, but for the time being, I don't know what that is. Maybe in the years to come, if the truth comes out, I'll find out just what a crucial incident the motel fire was. Or maybe not. Maybe it'll just remain a mystery, just like so many other things in life.
This happened February 14th, Valentine's Day. Me and two of my friends decided we would get a cheap hotel room and they would take some LSD to kick off the loneliest holiday ever. I've done it before, but I wasn't in a good mindset to take it that night, so I settled for a bottle of wine. Anyway, we weren't familiar with the area of the hotel motel that we booked the room at, but it was cheap, and that's all that really mattered to us. It was around 3 in the morning, and outside the door we hear someone stumbling around and bumping into the walls. But it was Valentine's Day, so we brush it off as a drunk couple going to get it on. The stumbling stops outside of our door and just got silent. My friends are tripping at this point, and I'm pretty drunk. We hear this woman start sobbing outside of our door, and I'm assuming she sat down on her back on our door, because we heard her slide down the wall and collapse right on the other side. The woman starts trying to speak to us through the cracks of the door outline, saying she lost her dogs and was wondering if we could help her. It was 3 a.m. and we didn't know shit about the area, so common sense would say, don't respond. So we didn't. The woman then proceeds to bang on the door, saying we stole her dogs and she's gonna come in and fucking murder us. She was scratching and banging at the door for 10 minutes straight and then just stopped. My friends are starting to have a bad trip because of her, and when she stopped, I tried to reassure them she was gone and they could go back to having a good time. To prove it to my friends, I checked through the peephole to verify that this woman was indeed gone. The bitch was trying to stare right back at me through the other side of the peephole. I watched her as she stepped back and stood there, as still and solid as a literal concrete statue. She had her eyes right on the peephole, staring right into my eye. I doubt she could see me through the peephole, but I was making dead eye contact with her. The woman then proceeds to start screaming and throwing her body against the door, which thankfully woke up our neighbors, and they called the front desk. The woman behind the front desk comes and tries to get this woman to leave. The woman left, but was going down the hallway of the hotel being loud and not leaving the property, still crying out for her lost dogs, in the hotel hallway, at 3 a.m. The cops get called on this woman and she disappeared, but she never left the hotel. Cops were running around the halls trying to find her. The woman from the front desk asked me if I could give a better description or any information to the police. Me, being an underage girl, drunk out of my mind, tried to decline, but the cops ended up coming to my door anyway. I tried my best to act like an innocent little sober girl. They said they never saw her leave and implied that she's still inside. So they just told me to keep an eye out for her and call the front desk if anything else happens. The police stayed posted on the outside of the hotel for about an extra 30 minutes, then left. Turns out this bitch was just on crack, but still, hearing this woman throw her body onto the door saying she would kill us was traumatizing enough. We left early that morning and never went back. Thanks to this woman for killing my friend's trip and my drunkenness.
It all started when I woke up to the sound of someone hammering on my apartment door. That was the first fright I got that night, heart pounding in my chest as I grabbed the bat I kept under my bed and headed towards the door. First thing I do is look through the peephole to make sure it's not anyone sketchy, but I'm greeted by the sight of one of my neighbors. She looks terrified. She's covered in blood, and I can see just through the peephole that her face is a mess. I open up the door, she runs inside and immediately says, "You gotta get me out of here. My boyfriend's trying to kill me." I start to ask her what happened, and she says something like, "There's no time. Just please get me out of here. I swear to God, he'll kill you too for just helping me." That was what sent me into a straight-up panic, because if a guy was willing to beat his girlfriend up that badly, Lord knows that he'd be willing to put me in the ground. I just grabbed my car keys, ran downstairs with the girl following close behind, jumped into my car, then took off into the night. I remember asking her if she had anywhere I could take her, like a friend's or a relative's or something. She said no, and the best thing for us to do would be to drive to a motel so she could call the cops from there. So that's exactly what I did. I drove us to a motel and booked us a room. The clerk was obviously just as concerned as I was, but all it took was to explain that her boyfriend had tried to off her, and they were like, "Jeez, make sure you guys call the cops at least." The girl, whose name I didn't know at that point, I just knew she was a neighbor, said that she'd go up to the room and call them, then asked me to get her some ice from the ice machine so she could deal with the swelling on her face. When I got to the room, she said the cops would be there ASAP, took the ice, put it on her face, then just burst into tears. I tried my best to reassure her, telling her she was safe and stuff, then when she finally calmed down, I asked her what actually happened back at her apartment. She told me her boyfriend was abusive, and that she'd been planning on leaving for a while, but that night was the night she'd finally got the courage together to announce it to him. She said he walked into their bedroom to find her packing a bag, and not long after that, everything went to chaos. She started helping herself to the little bottle of liquor from the minibar, but not after promising she'd pay me back for them once everything had blown over. I had no reason to disbelieve her at the time. I mean, I felt like we had a kind of bond established already, but I abstained because I thought I'd be driving back to the apartment pretty soon. I asked her if she was good to wait on her own while the cops drove out to her, but she asked me if I'd stay to keep her safe. She then made the point that if her boyfriend found the blood on my apartment door, she assured me that she'd left some on there while hammering on it, that he'd know she'd been there and he'd try to attack me, or worse. I'll be honest, I thought it was a pretty good point at the time. I hadn't seen the blood myself, but she was so covered in it that I believed her when she said that there was some on my door. Anyway, about an hour goes by and the cops still haven't showed up, and the motel rooms were arranged in a horseshoe shape, so we'd have seen them rolling into the parking lot if they had. I asked her to call them back to see what was going on, because obviously it was a really urgent situation, and I know that there was basically no way for the boyfriend in finding us, but I was still really paranoid that he would somehow. That's when the inconsistency started, because she gave me some lame duck of a reply like, "I'm sure they'll be here soon." If that was me, I'd have called 911 again if they hadn't shown up within like 10 minutes. So what was she so calm about that she was just cool with waiting for them for like an hour at that point? I put it down to booze, and at that point I was okay with waiting too. It wasn't like I had anywhere to be. I sure couldn't just go back to my apartment with that psycho supposedly just a few doors down. But that's also about the same time that I started checking out the amount of blood on her nightshirt. She had like an oversized t-shirt and girl boxers on, and like I said earlier, they were drenched with blood, but also with some blood splattered too, like little spots here and there. She had this cut over her eye, and she had a nasty busted lip, but it looked like way too much blood for just those small wounds. So I asked her if she had any other kind of injuries, like an abdominal wound of some kind that might account for all the blood on her. She said no, and that it was all from the busted lip in her eye. And immediately I start smelling nonsense. I asked her again what exactly had happened back at the apartment, and she started getting weirdly defensive about what she told me. I was starting to think it wasn't quite the abusive spouse kind of story that she told me the first time around, but I had no inkling of what was really going on. That being said, I was getting tired of waiting for the cops to show, so I decided to call them back myself. All I had on me was my wallet, my phone, and my car keys, the only three things I'd had time to stuff into the pockets of my shorts before fleeing the apartment. But when I take my phone out to call the cops, she says something along the lines of, "What are you doing?" I state the obvious, I'm about to call the cops back, and she's like, "Don't." I don't know if it was the way she was looking at me, the way she spoke, or the way she sort of tensed up when I told her that I was about to do that, but the mood in the room just shifted completely. I asked her why not, then just went right back to dialing 911. But by the time the operator spoke down the line, I looked up and saw she had a knife in her hand. She just said, "Hang up, now." So I did. I'd never had a knife pulled on me at that point, and I can't overstate how terrifying it was. It wasn't even just the knife either. It was the overwhelming creepy sensation of knowing that all wasn't what it seemed. I wasn't hiding from the threat. I was with the threat. I'll be honest here. I basically begged her not to hurt me. And to my relief, she said she wouldn't as long as I drove her to the Canadian border. Given this was in Detroit, the border isn't all that far, but I didn't want to catch charges for aiding and abetting or whatever. So I knew I had to think of something to stop that from happening. It's not like I knew I couldn't tell the cops that I'd been threatened or whatever, but I also knew that the longer I spent in this girl's company, the more chances I'd have of being stabbed. So, I tell the girl that I'd drive her to the border, but that I needed to get something to eat first. I play it like I wanted to stop somewhere on the way, knowing she'd reason me down to getting something delivered from a 24-hour joint. She also stated that she'd be the one going down to pick the food up, as she didn't want me having the chance to sound the alarm. That's where she messed up, because she didn't seem to realize, to my infinite relief, that I could order from DoorDash and put something in the notes about needing the cops called to the motel. My whole plan hinged on there being a driver around that late at night, but thank God there was, and I was even able to show her the order without bringing up the notes section that mentioned needing 911 called to the motel. And the cops played it perfectly too. They showed up without any lights and sirens on, didn't park in the lot, walked up to the motel room without being spotted from the window, then just knocked on the door like they were a delivery driver. She walks over, opens up the door, then boom, they had a gun and a taser drawn on her before she even knew what was happening. She had the knife tucked into the back of her girl boxers, but the cops were wise to her drawing on them, and she hit the floor hard after they hit her with the taser. Turned out they'd been looking for her because, get this, she was the abusive partner who'd stabbed her boyfriend almost to death before finding some poor schmuck, i.e. me, to drive her to the border. Dude almost bled to death in their apartment but managed to crawl to another neighbor's place to get help. You should have seen the amount of blood in the hallway when I got back to my apartment building and the whole place was crawling with cops and forensic gear. I thought I might be able to drive over to a friend's place to stay the night, you know, contaminating a crime scene or whatever, but they had this section of the corridor closed off so I could actually get into where I lived. The cops came to my apartment in the morning to take my statement down and to fill me in on what they thought had happened. That's how I found out exactly what the deal was. It was 100% the craziest, most frightening thing that's ever happened to me, ever in my life. And just the fact that I was part of it seems completely surreal to me. But the thing that sticks with me is how easily I swallowed her nonsense story at first, how I thought it was helping someone I knew, someone I could trust, when in reality, one wrong move, and I might not actually be around to tell you this.